Have you ever felt uncomfortable when a virtual meeting starts and no one talks? What if you knew some friendly words that could help everyone feel relaxed and connected right away? Just talking casually for 1.5 minutes can make people want to meet with you again. Think about how helpful it would be to have 3 easy conversation starters for your work meetings.
Today, we're breaking down the art of small talk and why it's your hidden advantage in cross-cultural communication. We're going to unveil the 3 universal icebreakers a little bit later. I invite you to try them right after you finish watching.
Welcome to the Fluent Edge podcast.
I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, high performance leadership coach.
And I'm Sean Watson, your English communication coach. So we've heard it all before, no time for small talk, but the science says otherwise. Microbanter, those brief, off-the-cuff exchanges, can reduce stress, increase follow-ups, and build trust, especially in virtual environments. These moments become strategic tools. So Howie, in your own experience leading workshops or coaching people or teams, have you noticed a shift in how people value or avoid small talk?
Well, I noticed that very often the meeting starts and nobody's in charge yet. So maybe the person who called the meeting isn't even on, or they're busy doing something else, and people are kind of just sort of standing around awkwardly, like guests at a wedding and nobody knows each other. And everyone is relieved when one person takes charge and says, "So, anybody have any good stories from this week?" Or they say, "Anybody go on a good vacation?" Or something to get people talking, and the whole energy shifts. It's a way to step into leadership, even if you're not the leader, to make everyone else feel comfortable.
And do you think it's changed your own approach in how you open sessions with people or build rapport?
It definitely has, because I've seen the power. And I'm a person who likes to sort of hold back a little bit and wait until it feels safe and not jump in. But as I've been leading groups, and I see that everyone has deferred to me as the leader, they don't necessarily want to jump in. It absolutely sets a tone. If I'll even just comment on something in someone's background, or very often people have a real background and not a virtual one, you'd see books. And I'll say, "Tell me the last book on that shelf that you read, or your favorite book." Then other people get interested and it becomes a coffee table piece that we can all connect around. And it becomes a place where we can put things we value, things we care about. So for me, it's reading and ideas and conversations. And this physical object in the background on their set becomes the focal point that makes it easy for us all to talk about what we care about.
Just a few vocabulary words for people. So the first one is icebreaker, some sort of a light remark to start a conversation, to break the ice. Here in Canada, that hits close to home. We spend a lot of time breaking ice or slipping on the ice. And then the next phrase is chit-chat, casual, informal talk, very similar to the small talk idea. Chit-chat. And make sure that you pronounce it like a CH and not like an SH at the beginning. Extremely important, especially for Spanish speakers.
Or French speakers who have cats.
That's right, exactly. Another phrase we sometimes talk about is psychological safety. So we want to make sure that we have an environment where people feel safe speaking up. The next one is to touch base. Originally from baseball, a lot of our idioms in North American English come from sports.
If I completely missed the point, I'm way out in right field.
You're way out in right field. Exactly. In North American English, we have a lot of idioms coming from baseball, basketball, even hockey. And then the next term is the noun follow-up. So continued communication after a first meeting. You can also take away the dash in the middle and turn it into a phrasal verb. I want to follow up from our last meeting. So very often with phrasal verbs, you can put a dash between them and turn them into nouns.
I never thought of that. Is there another example you can give of that?
Like hookup. We're having like a company hookup this weekend.
Cool.
The next word is rapport. In English, we have a lot of words with silent letters, and this is often because of the French influence. So go back and watch the podcast about why English pronunciation is so difficult. So instead of rapport, it's spelled R-A-P-P-O-R-T. It looks like rapport, but we don't pronounce the ending. And then the final phrase I wanted to introduce is off the cuff. So off the cuff is like spontaneous or unplanned meetings or presentations or conversations where you're just improvising. It's completely unscripted, unplanned, off the cuff. So let's talk about why small talk feels hard, especially for English learners. Many of my students say it feels fake. Sometimes it feels too personal. Sometimes people feel that it's unclear in what's appropriate. I know for myself, when I've traveled and tried to engage in small talk, I don't know whether I'm doing it correctly in the second language or not. Using small talk as a non-native English speaker, it does create its own kind of anxiety.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a risk. You wouldn't have small talk about the work that you're about to do because that's by definition no longer small talk. That's transactional, functional talk. So there is a risk, and there will be times when we may embarrass ourselves. In my mind, I can think back to all the times that I was clumsy and let that stop me. But what I want people to think about with small talk, as with any form of communication, is what's your intention? What's the outcome you're going for? So for small talk, as you said, we're going for psychological safety. Where I grew up, and in most countries that come from a European origin, when you meet someone, you shake their hand. And this comes from showing that my right hand, my sword hand, is unarmed. And small talk is a metaphorical way of doing that, of showing that I am safe. So even if I'm coming across a little goofy or silly, it's better than looking like I'm judging them, I'm withdrawn, I'm defensive. So to simply signal that humanity is one important point. As a leader, we want to make sure that we humanize the people around us. Well, if you have 100 people in your organization, they probably don't expect you to even know who they are, to know their name, to know their spouse's birthday, or that their child just graduated from high school. And we know that when leaders learn about their people, people become loyal, people become friendly, it becomes caring because it's no longer transactional. So if you want to make small talk to learn things that people are willing to share with you, then that's a very strategic way to humanize yourself as a leader and to show people that you're interested in them as human beings and not just as line items on a payroll.
I love that. And of course, if we avoid it, then there could be missed opportunities to connect, to show empathy, and even to be remembered. When you're working with executive clients, what are the typical topics that come up in small talk?
Well, as I said, I love to comment on people's backgrounds.
Right.
And so very often, you have a virtual background. So I might comment on that. And sometimes the person will say, let me turn this off for a second and show you where I really am. And you see the laundry hanging on the treadmill and a kid running around in the background, which I find adorable, if not professional, even for just that minute to see somebody's life. Mm-hmm. I will often comment on any commonalities. I find myself finding a lot of bald men. So I'll say, I see we're the two people here with the best barbers. So if I had hair, I wouldn't kind of make fun of a bald man. I'm including myself. I'm looking for commonalities. When I'm teaching and there's a group of people and someone comes on, where in the world are you right now? And they'll say someplace. Mm-hmm. And I can either have been there or I can say, how long have you lived there? But I'm putting myself in a little bit of a lower position relationally so that I'm interested in them and they can feel free to return the serve, to use another sports metaphor, or they can just let it go. Mm-hmm. Some people just want to be private, don't want to talk about their background. But as we get to know each other, we bump into each other. There's more danger of playing it too safe than having a little oops and backing off and smiling and showing that you're genuinely interested. People will forgive a lot if they think that you care about them.
Right. And I think that just having that natural sense of curiosity in a very authentic way, just to ask people about their lives or where they are, those are great ways to drum up more conversation. I just got off a Zoom call with a client in China, and we were talking about famous Canadian brands. And he didn't realize that Tim Hortons, which is a big Canadian coffee chain, has more than 700 outlets in China.
Oh.
And so suddenly he says, wow, there's a Canadian brand here that I can check out. He knew Starbucks, but he didn't know about Tim's or Tim Hortons. So that was just kind of a cool way for us to talk about coffee culture between China and Canada. Thinking of small talk as a micro investment, it's not a waste of time. It's that handshake before the collaboration, before building trust. It does boost the mood to have micro interactions. Generally, the guidelines say that 90 seconds is kind of the right amount to really jump in to do a warm up or small talk. So let's jump into the three universal icebreakers. For the first one, this is when we talk about something in a shared environment. It's usually focusing on something physically present in the immediate surroundings. things. So you mentioned like the background and what it would look like if I didn't have this virtual background. I could use another example of something like, wow, I noticed that coffee mug sitting on your table. I've always wanted a mug like that. And I think this one also works because it shows you're paying attention to the immediate setting.
Yep. And I want to ask questions that encourage full conversations rather than yes, no, or simple answers. I would rather say something like, what was your favorite session? Or what was your favorite part of the weekend? So that it leads to disclosure rather than a closed-ended answer.
Absolutely. And the second one is also a kind of a positive observation, but it's a bit broader. So it could be something that you notice about the person or the situation, not just physical objects. For example, if I say, I love how your presentation style brings such energy to the room. Or I could say, you know, your thoughtful questions earlier really helped move the discussion forward.
Yeah. And it also helps you practice your powers of appreciation. My best friend growing up, his father was a clergyman and was often called upon to officiate at funerals. And he told a story one day of this funeral he was asked to go to. He didn't know the man or the family, but they were reaching out and he wanted to give the eulogy. So he was asking them about this man, and nobody had a single good word to say about him.
Oh.
He was mean, he was nasty, he was selfish, he ignored his family, he spent every free minute at the racetrack. My friend's father said, he got up and he said, so-and-so was a great lover of animals.
And how did that go over? Did a hush descend over the crowd?
We never got to that part of the story, but the idea that he could find something good to say about this person, that he loved the horses, he was an animal lover. I'm telling that as almost a joke to remind us, just for our own mental, emotional health, and also to be contagiously positive for other people, to look for things that we appreciate.
Yes.
And I want to caution a little bit about compliments as opposed to appreciation. Because if I compliment you, I say, Sean, you are so intelligent. It sounds great, but I've set myself up as a judge that I'm qualified to assess your intelligence. If I say, your questions during that morning session helped me so much, they really helped me get to the bottom of this complex issue. That's not a compliment. That's an appreciation. That's an experience that I've had that I can share with you, and it doesn't put me above you in any way.
So there is a time for complimenting and there's a time for showing appreciation, depending on the context, right?
Right?
And just to talk a little bit further about some of the cultural differences, I think sometimes in North American English, we tend to maybe sound a little bit over-enthusiastic. I've noticed in other cultures, what I interpret as being a little bit unfriendly is just their normal reserve. That's how they engage.
Yes, I've been told by people around the world that, why are Americans always smiling and laughing? Are they stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
We also fit the stereotype in some cultures of the fool.
Right, or the used car salesman with the permagrin on his face. That's a really interesting observation. Permagrin.
What are you talking about, permagrin?
Permagrin, good question. So a permanent smile. So I don't know if that actually is a word, but it sounded good in the moment.
Well, but I understood it because I know, I guess in Canada you have permafrost. So
we have a lot of permafrost.
So
yeah.
you could apply perma to lots of things in a sort of whimsical, comical way.
Yes.
Right? You could say, she's got a perma frown.
Absolutely. Or she's got a perm when people have their hair made curly or wavy. Wow, what a lovely perm you have. And I know, for example, in Japan or Korea, it's better to start small talk with observational comments. I mean, if you said something like, wow, the cherry blossoms are particularly beautiful this season. Or you could say something like, I see you have prepared such detailed presentation materials. They look very professional. Have you been working in this industry for a long time? So it's a little bit less, hi, my name's Sean. I really want to meet you.
So I think for leaders, it's very important when you're working cross-culturally to find someone who can be a bridge, who understands your culture, who understands where you're coming from, or your come from, if we turned it into a noun.
Ooh, wow. Right. Yeah, your come from.
I actually have heard coaches say that. Like, what's his come from?
That's a new one for me.
Meaning, you know, your orientation towards an issue or a situation.
Right.
But to find someone who can be a guide and can give you honest feedback about how you're being perceived. Because another thing we lose track of in other cultures is we don't know how to read people's body language, facial expressions. I remember giving a talk in Germany. After an hour, I was panicking. And I called a break and I went to talk to the person who'd hired me. And I said, what am I doing wrong? He says, no, people love it. But they're staring at their notes and they're not laughing and they're not smiling and they're not responding. He says, no, we really like it. I can tell.
I've seen the same thing in countries like Finland or Sweden. Whatever it looks like on the exterior, it's not necessarily what's going on inside of their heads. Speaking of Germany or countries like France, I think it's important to keep it light, but professional. Generally, you should avoid overly personal questions early on. So you could say something like, I noticed you have extensive experience in international markets. Perhaps we could discuss industry trends over coffee. It's friendly. It's still kind of keeping that professional edge to it. Right?
Yes.
I just also wanted to introduce a few idioms and expressions connected with small talk and speaking. So the first one is to shoot the breeze, to have a casual, relaxed conversation about maybe unimportant things. Another one would be to strike up a conversation, to begin talking to someone, to strike up a conversation. And then the final one, to put someone at ease, to help someone feel comfortable, to feel less nervous. In a previous episode, I introduced collocations. So you could say in English, a difficult silence or an uncomfortable silence, but the most common one is awkward silence. Another one would be friendly opener. So just to create something at the beginning that sounds inviting and warm and conversational, a friendly opener. And earlier we talked about the word rapport. So we can also talk about rapport builder, something that builds rapport or connection between people. Collocations are just the most natural way in English to put words together.
Well, this is an awkward silence, Sean.
Should we do some more rapport building? So I just wanted to encourage everybody to grab our free resource pack. We've created a 40 cross-cultural starter kit. So lots of phrases that you can use in different situations.
So here's that listener challenge. Try out one of those three icebreakers that we mentioned in a real world setting, on a call, in a meeting, or even during a networking event. Let us know what happened in the comments and we could feature your story in an upcoming episode.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share the Fluent Edge podcast with friends or colleagues who are working on their English or leadership communication. If you're looking for support beyond the podcast, we've each opened up spots for one-on-one coaching, and Howie helps professionals avoid burnout, lead with purpose, and shift their mindset for sustainable success.
And if you're focused on English clarity, global presence, or confident communication, book a free discovery call with Sean. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Keep thinking clearly, communicating boldly, and leading with your voice.
Stay sharp, stay human, stay fluent.